Welcome to Learned Lag, a podcast about yesterday's Learned League questions and answers. I'm George.
And I'm Amanda. George and I are both in Zephyr A. This is season 32 for George and season 28 for me.
This is day 22 of season 100. First question asks us what tech giant almost made a market cap of $2 trillion last month.
Yeah, this is noting that it makes generative AI chips for servers, and I wasn't totally sure about that specific detail of it, but I know that NVIDIA has just been booming like crazy lately. Like, they're the market leader around the world in at least some type of chip. I knew that they're a chip maker. And so that was my best guess, because just I read a fairly long New Yorker article about how they came to be so dominant in their particular field of chip making. So I figured that sounded like the likeliest story. And if it wasn't, then we're going a layer deeper in my business and econ knowledge than is going to serve me. So I went ahead and put down NVIDIA.
My first thought was Intel. They make chips. They're a tech giant.
Sure.
And then I thought, no, I think it's probably that other company, the one that makes the graphics cards and chips. And it took me a little while to remember, oh, yeah, NVIDIA, that's it. But then I thought, are they a tech giant? I mean, obviously they would be if they were a $2 trillion company, but that just didn't seem like a way to describe them independently of that. Like, I know they are a big company. They make a lot of things, but to me, tech giant means more than just like, we make this one thing that we sell a lot of.
Right.
And I'm not phrasing that well, and it's not a great definition anyway, because obviously if you sell if you're worth $2 trillion, even according to the insane stock market, then, you know, you're giant, you're fairly big.
Sure.
But it seemed like a weird way to describe them. So I kept going back to Intel thinking, well, they've made chips for a long time that go all over the place and they do other stuff. So it would make sense that they make these generative AI chips for servers and, you know, might have a stock spike. And I could swear I heard your brother who works for them and is listening to this right now with his head in his hands. I could swear that I'd heard him talking about how, you know, these chips were booming, and therefore it must be something about his company. I may be inventing that out of whole cloth to have justified it to myself, because I finally just settled on Intel.
Okay, well, much to your and probably my brother's chagrin, it is NVIDIA.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'd love it if it was Intel, because boy, oh boy, that's a blockbuster situation for them. Question two asks us what three-word phrase coined by William James in his 1890 Principles of Psychology has since been applied to many literary products, let's say.
So this is me sitting there this morning trying to think of this train of thought. No, it's not train of thought. It's the other thing. It's like that. It's the thing where you're just writing like you're just forming it as you go, and you're exposed to the inner thoughts of the narrator, because he's just constantly talking and constantly telling you about what it is, like our daughter, and it's just you just keep vomiting it out on the page, and it's the thing where it's just a stream of consciousness. It's stream of consciousness. There we go.
How dare you demonstrate that to
the audience? That was exactly what happened in my mind as I'm sitting there trying to figure this out.
Yes, that's very stream of consciousnessception of you. But yeah, this did not take me quite that mental effort to find, just because if you get down to talking about James Joyce, stream of consciousness is the first thing that always comes to mind, thinking about his style of writing. I think somehow I didn't realize that phrase even hailed from psychology per se.
Yeah.
I've only heard it used as a literary term that I recall, although I was a psychology major, so probably I read about it somewhere, but yeah, I just thought, you know, once I kind of figured out, okay, these are the literary pieces that we're talking about, which include a chapter of Portrait of a Lady, sections of Mrs. Dalloway, Into the Lighthouse, and then the kicker is really Ulysses. That one in particular is very known for being in the voice, that stream of consciousness voice. And so this kind of just another question where I know the answer, but the question itself kind of enhances my knowledge of it. So I also put stream of consciousness.
And that was the correct answer. Question three tells us that the Treaty of Paris that ended the Spanish-American War ceded the Philippines, Puerto Rico, and what from Spain to the U.S.? What Pacific island specifically?
Right. So this is where I kind of rely on a little bit of my, you know, once again, the Statel app for the web game comes in handy because it also looks at American territories, which I'm not sure if Guam has come up in that much. I know that certainly Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands are listed in there. And so it kind of just reminds me that we have these other areas around the world that belong to the U.S. but are not quite incorporated in the same way that the 50 states are. And so that coupled with I had a friend in elementary school whose dad was in the military, and we were only friends for a few years because then her parents got moved to Guam. And so and honestly, I don't even know how that took place. I was a kid. I was not privy to any of the reasons why that was. But I've just kind of known that Guam was a thing, you know, an island out there that the U.S. owned. And I briefly considered, like, could this be American Samoa? But I think that's not just a Pacific island. And I didn't really think that it fit in with my sense of what had previously been Spanish territories versus I was pretty sure Guam was, along with these other ones mentioned. And so just all that kind of in the back of my mind, I went with Guam.
I kind of did that, but quicker, in that, yeah, I just kind of thought, okay, Pacific Islands, what do we got out there? We got American Samoa out there. We got the Marianas. We got Guam. Guam. Was Guam Spanish? That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. I think it probably was. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'll go with Guam. Mm-hmm.
And that was the correct answer. Yeah.
I went to a military training thing in college where there was a cadet from Guam, the university thereon.
Sure.
And he got absolutely tortured by one of our instructors on, I forget what it was, we were about to do something, and to do it, to advance to the next stage, you had to, you know, answer a question. And the question that the instructor kept asking of this kid was, what is the state fish of Guam? And he kept trying to answer. It's, no, go to the back of the line, try again. He get up the back of the front line. What is the state fish of Guam? No. And finally, so I think someone took him aside and pointed out, Guam is not a state, bro.
Yeah.
And that was what he yelled when he got back to the front of the line. And yes, he was able to proceed. So that is the second thing I know about Guam.
Wow.
There we go.
Okay. Well, that was correct. And so we'll move on to question four, asking what phrase Julia Child concluded every episode of The French Chef with. And that phrase is also the name of an American magazine.
It was Bon Appetit. This immediately came to me.
Indeed.
At the very beginning of the pandemic, when we were stuck at home, like stuck at home.
Yeah.
And you know, kind of desperate for entertainment, I stumbled on the fact that they were showing those very early French Chef episodes on, yes, like Amazon Prime, I think it was.
Sounds right.
So we watched a few of those, and they were great.
Oh, yeah.
And so I don't know whether I remember her saying Bon Appetit at the end of it, but if I did, she would. If I do remember, it's because it was a very French way that she said it. Not just Bon Appetit, but very. She just leans into the accent.
Sure.
Bon Appetit, probably, or something like that. Because I remember her pronunciation of sauté.
Oh, yes.
Sauté. The meat in this manner. Like,
right.
She's, Is she saying saute? I think she's saying saute. Okay, that's probably the correct way to say it then, but
yeah,
that never took, apparently. So, so yeah, and this seemed like, okay, yeah, it was Bon Appetit, a magazine in the 50s. It's been around for as long as I can remember. So, sure, probably. We'll go with Bon Appetit.
Yeah, this one, I think I relied maybe a little more on the magazine than you might have because my previous spouse, we used to subscribe to it in our household. It's it's what I would call sort of an approachable gourmet stance that they take to things. It's not quite like Gourmet magazine itself in terms of the elite level of cooking that its recipes demonstrate and so on. But it's definitely for foodies, for people who are, or, you know, it was at the time. I know it still exists on the web. I don't know if they publish print editions or not. But I certainly have several recipes that I've enjoyed from there. And so I don't think I would have remembered this necessarily. I might have puzzled it out, but having that clue in the question really solidified that it was Bon Appetit. That really clicked for me. So that's what I put down as well, but not with the accent mark or exclamation point.
No, me neither. But I suspect we will get it anyway because that was the correct answer.
Yes.
Question 5 gives us a very weird way to visualize the uppercase form of a letter of the Greek alphabet.
Yes. So I kind of want to read this in Rod Serling voice. Imagine the outline of a square. When the lines that form the right side and the bottom side of the square are removed, the two lines that remain, the top and left sides, most closely resemble the uppercase form of what letter of the Greek alphabet? So, in other words, you've got kind of the top vertical and the left, the top horizontal and left vertical lines at a right angle. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of did my gut check on it, and gamma was the letter that sounded the most correct. Mm-hmm. I tried to think about, like, I don't feel super confident about these other than the most, you know, commonly used Greek letters. Alpha, pi, you know, beta. I couldn't recite the alphabet to you and be sure that I had remembered all of them. And so just kind of thinking, like, is this how a G looks to me in the Greek lettering that I've seen? Is this how a G looks to me in Cyrillic lettering? Because it's very similar to Greek in a lot of ways. And I think that Cyrillic G is similar in shape to this. And so just that was my, it's another one where it's kind of like, this is my best guess. I won't feel too terrible if I have messed this one up. But I went with gamma because I thought I being like 58% sure that it was probably maybe right.
I went at it much the same way, but somewhat more confidently. Like I imagined that in my saw the thing that Thorsten was drawing for us in my mind and said, pretty sure that's gamma. Mm-hmm. Let me see, what else could it be? And I just kind of briefly thought about some of the other ones that are kind of, you know, not the obvious, like alpha is an A. That's obvious. Beta is a B. I thought, okay, lambda. No, lambda is a TP. Delta is a triangle. Mm-hmm. Rho is P. Theta is circle with a line through it. Sure. Horizontally, phi is a line through it vertically. I'm pretty sure that's gamma. Then I thought, okay, let's go at it from the other direction. Gamma is G. It became the letter G in the Roman alphabet. What's the version of G from the Greek alphabet? Because it doesn't look like that. They don't have a letter that's curly like that in the Greek alphabet. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's what replaced it. So, okay, I'm going to go with gamma. Yeah.
And that was the correct answer. Interestingly, the one bit I think I remember is the alphabetical order of the Greek alphabet is alpha, beta, gamma, delta.
Yes, it is not? The third so, letter.
Is there a... So it's essentially, that's the sound that you might use for C as well, like the hard C?
Well, they have kappa.
Okay.
For the K. And they but have that sigma looks like for a the K. S. Yes, that yeah. looks like it. So I don't... They didn't have, and as far as I know, they still don't, the equivalent of a C that is both a K and an S, and also okay. kind of combines with some other stuff for ch and stuff like mm-hmm. that, you know, that they have their own letters for.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
they don't need the C to fulfill all those functions.
True.
So I'm not sure how gamma moved to the seventh letter of our alphabet and became right. a different thing. but yeah, I believe gamma is the G sound and possibly the J as well, if they have that at all.
Oh,
I don't recall
yeah, I don't know.
Whether they actually do. They don't in Cyrillic.
Mm-hmm.
For the J sound in Cyrillic, they use D and the J letter.
Oh, right.
It's the freaky X with the line, vertical line through it.
I mean, in terms of Greek names, they must have a J sound. Because the basketball players, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Yeah, I don't know whether Giannis is a Greek name as
Fair
such.
Point. Oh, yeah.
Because he is I believe he has Nigerian parents as well. Parentage of some kind. So I don't know.
There are lots of George variants, at least. But yeah, now, but I can't think of...
Yorgos.
Yeah.
They have. So they do have the G sound, but then that's gamma.
Okay.
But I don't believe they have the J sound.
Okay, yeah. So it's more of a Y or a...
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay. All right.
This has been
talk amongst yourselves.
This has been things we don't actually know. yeah. The portion of the podcast.
The best part.
The best yeah. part. So,
moving on to question 6, we are asked to name a lively folk dance from southern Italy that's actually named after an Italian town and not after a particular arthropod.
So at some point, I'm going to remember that Italian is a gendered language, and that I need to think much more deeply about the ending of Italian words.
Ugh.
Because once again, I knew that this was the Tarantella, and went with Tarantello.
Ah.
Because I didn't even think of it. If I had, I may have thought more heavily about what's the vowel at the end there. But Tarantello worked for me. That I knew that was essentially what they were going for.
Uh-huh.
So I said Tarantello.
Okay. So I had to puzzle this one out a lot more than I guess you did.
Hmm.
Not knowing it off the top of my head, I went on through and looked at the rest of the clue about the arthropod. And so arthropods are insects. Let's say... non-vertebrate animals with mm-hmm. carapaces. It mentions, you know, legend claims that the dance cures or is caused by this arthropod's bite. So we're talking about an animal with a bite or, you know, probably not like a sting per se, because I think Thorsten would be more precise than that in phrasing the question. So I went through, you know, various insects that I could think of that bite, like a mosquito or a tsetse fly or something, you know, something that could plausibly be interesting sounding enough to be, or Latinate sounding enough, let's say, to be also an Italian dance or town. And finally, I went on through to, like, kind of at the same time, I had this idea that there's something called a tarantara, and that kind of made me think of tarantula, like, and I realized, okay, it's definitely something related to tarantula,
because
that's the connection that's clearly being drawn. Like, I don't know why it was clear to me, but I was like, this is a tarantula thing. And so I thought of tarantara, but I was like, I'm not sure that's the right thing that I'm thinking of, and let myself ponder it some more. And then I thought, well, could it be just called tarantula and looks like tarantula, but it's, you know, but it's enunciated differently. And I thought, oh, no, there's a thing called a tarantelle. That's T-A-R-I-N-T-E-L-L-E. And I was like, I'm pretty sure that one's a dance. And I also had to sort out for myself the fact that the question asks for the correct spelling of this answer, which is unusual. Usually spelling doesn't count.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's specified, then of course it does.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, okay, the reason for that is Thorsten doesn't want you to try to be clever and slippery enough to just put down tarantula
mm-hmm.
for this, because clearly, like, the consonant sounds are the same, but something about the vowel sounds are different enough
mm-hmm.
that just putting down tarantula means you only kind of figure out that half of the question,
mm-hmm.
that you're not really getting at what he's trying to have you reach. So I thought, okay, that's my argument in favor of going with tarantelle. Because I'm pretty sure that's a type of dance, and that sounds like it maybe in Italian it is basically tarantella, like the E sound in Italian is eh, kind of. So, you know, the way that is, that spelling still could make sense for an Italian, word of some kind. So I put down tarantelle with an E on the end.
It was tarantella.
Yeah, so it's like 90% correct on that one.
Yeah.
Now, I will mention I put in a scoring appeal for this one. And the reason is that I was pretty sure tarantelle itself was a word and that it was a music word. And a quick Googling does suggest that that is a synonym for tarantella. You know, I couldn't find, like, that's from, like, vocabulary.com, so
mm-hmm.
I would feel better if it wasn't one of the dictionary websites or Wikipedia, but it does appear, like, there's a lot of classical music compositions that are called tarantelles, and that's because they are structured or based upon the tarantella dance, or, you know, I don't know if there's one particular song that's the tarantella, but I assume it's a dance done to many types of songs. So, you know, I feel like I hope I have a shot here, because then if I did, then I will have beard it.
Mm.
But that it all depends on that one stinking letter.
Yeah.
So
I'm hoping that, as you say, what he's really looking for is not tarantula.
Yes.
And that anything that tells him, oh, okay, they know that it was named after the tarantula, but, you know, it, albeit indirectly, but it is not the tarantula dance.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that'll work.
Yeah, I kind of would hope that you would get credit for that too, just because that's, you know, that ending isn't changing your knowledge of that there's this thing that is basically mm-hmm. that. So.
Oh, well.
I guess you know, I'll have to delay my beer drinking till the following day, so no cracking open of the bottle or can here.
I don't know.
But, you know, still pretty glad for the other polls overall. Like, I, you know, some of my reading habits are working for me with getting NVIDIA, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, good to know that I have kind of consolidated Greek letters, mm-hmm. you know, to some extent. I'm probably selling myself a bit short on those, on talking about my knowledge of those, because I know a lot of them, just not in a very organized way.
Mm-hmm.
So here's hoping I can get over the line with that last one.
Hope so. Well, that's it for today. Tune in tomorrow for more post-game analysis. Follow us on Blue Sky at Learned Lag, now with all the vowels. And remember,
don't forfeit.
Don't cheat.